Welcome to Victory Over Communism with Bill Gertz, the only program willing to pull back the curtain of communism to reveal how China and even America's own brand of Marxism pose real threats to freedom and democracy in America and the world today. Your host and guide to victory over communism is one of the nation's most experienced national security journalists, Bill Gertz, who uses unique facts, pinpoint analysis, and exclusive interviews to identify and counter today's destructive communist ideologies. Now, Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm now in the third season of presenting a critique and counterproposal to Chinese communism and American Marxism. The podcast is educational in tone. I critique these destructive ideologies on the one hand, but significantly, I then seek to go beyond mere critique to counterproposal using Judeo-Christian values that are the foundation of Western civilization and that are under ideological assault today. There are roughly four parts to each podcast. Critique of Marxism and Chinese communism, I alternate for each podcast. Then comes the counterproposal section. Third is the news portion. And fourth is an interview section. The first part of this episode will expose the fallacies of critical race theory. In doing so, I will highlight its most prominent features. The counterproposal looks at Judeo-Christian-based series of steps that we can adopt to counter the spread of communism. For the news portion, I look at the internal damage being inflicted upon the United States, and my interview is with David Burgess, a specialist in critical theory who has developed a program similar to VOC called WICC, W-I-C-C, or Woke Ideology Critique and Counterproposal. I'm sure you're going to find it's real interesting. For part one of this episode, I'm indebted to Christopher Russo, a conservative documentary filmmaker and author who specializes in critiquing critical race theory. He calls the theory the new face of Marxism, and it is. Russo, who is with the Manhattan Institute, in my view, has done more than any other expert in the field in critiquing this new Marxist ideology. His work is online and is worth pursuing for those seeking additional data points from him. Critical race theory is being operationalized in the United States and is posing an existential threat to the American system of freedom and democracy. As mentioned, CRT promises itself as the new phase of Marxism. What that means is that it is providing the same kind of false vision as the old face of Marxism that supplanted religion and spirituality by offering an alternative atheist model to how to solve all the problems of society and ultimately produce what religions once promised as the ideal heaven on earth. For old Marxism, that vision was couched as the workers' paradise, where all problems of society would be solved. Notably, capitalist exploitation of the working class would end, and even eventually the all-powerful state itself would even wither away. Since its first iteration in the mid-1800s, Marxism-Leninism, the official definition of communism, has proved to be a disaster for humanity, with scores of millions dead and as a direct result of its theories and practices. The old face of Marxism was hideous and produced mass death and poverty, all of it justified under the ideology as the price of reaching their ultimate ideal. Under President Reagan, Britain's Margaret Thatcher, and Polish Pope John Paul II, the initial landing zone for the evil ideology of communism, the Soviet Union and its European satellites, was vanquished, without really firing a shot. The euphoria led much of the non-communist world to declare that Cold War was over and that communism was dead, never to be imposed again. But wait, that's not what happened. Instead, the Chinese communists, who secretly remained devoted to all of communism's founders, Marx, Engels, Lenin, Stalin, and Mao Zedong, Beijing's communists since 2012 and the rise of neo-Chinese communist Xi Jinping are on the march ideologically and geopolitically, seeking the ultimate control of the world and to refashion it into a nightmare of Marxism-Leninism with Chinese characteristics for the new era being dictatorship of Chinese communism. What does that have to do with critical race theory? Well, a lot. Critical race theory has resurrected Marxism with some distinctly American features. There are two major ideological innovations. The first is that it is Marxism's philosophy of resentment and hatred of religion filtered through the prism of racism. Second, American Marxism is embracing CRT, critical race theory, as an adaptation of the failed Soviet communist ideology and through what is called postmodernism. I call it neo-Marxism that has adapted to the ways of the 21st century by changing its approach to the Marxist failures of the 20th century. Key to this ideological gymnastics is the Marxist misuse of language to deceive populations about the true goals and intentions. First is the idea of truth. Truth ultimately comes from God. It is unique, absolute, and unchanging. The first tell, if you will, that Marxism is a false ideology is the fact that it is constantly changing both its philosophical precepts and its practices. No true ideology could manage to exist by making such fundamental changes. Critical race theory is built on a fundamental lie, that the United States is fundamentally and irrevocably a racist country. Key to this view is that a Marxist dialectic is at work in not the exploited worker versus the ruling capitalist, but a much more vague and fluid notion that the dialectic forces that are driving towards the ideal world are made up of two categories. Those who are oppressed in the broadest sense of the word, battling the oppressors, that the CRT ideologists mainly categorize as white, religious, conservative, and patriotic. The oppressor versus oppressed distinction for CRT is designed along racial lines with a kind of white patriarchal oppressor and a subordinate racial minority as the oppressed. Under this view, the achievement of racial equality requires doing away with all oppressive structures in the United States, including, and most importantly, the capitalist economic system, and significantly, the two-parent family, which for millennia has been the central institution of all societies. Here, the Marxist Black Lives Matter group, the self-described organization that rose to prominence in 2020 and claims to be dedicated to ending white supremacy, declared on their website in a section called What We Believe that, quote, "We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another." This is a clear reference to socialism. After it was highlighted by groups, it was removed. But the declaration is based on Marxist ideology that the family unit is a hierarchy that undergirds capitalism. And capitalism, the Marxists falsely argue, is what is perpetuating the American system of racism. Therefore, tearing down capitalism requires breaking up its foundation, the family. The leaders of the main Black Lives Matter organization openly agree with this. The CRT Marxists also want to do away with laws that promote, at the surface level of equality and freedom, that claim are covert ways of advancing racial domination. CRT even falsely believes Abraham Lincoln, who abolished slavery and freed the slaves and gave them rights, was merely part of a clever scheme to advance racism. Rufo reveals that this notion of CRT produced an ideological inversion where 20th century Marxists cast themselves as centered around the working class, the disenfranchised, the industrial proletariat who would be organized to take over and commandeer the industrial apparatus, and then the governing apparatus in order to make more fair and equitable distribution of resources. By contrast, in critical race theory, the oppressed are actually a class of elite intellectuals and administrators, people running the educational bureaucracy, the left-wing media, who have gained positions within elite institutions, claiming to be a vaunted, oppressed class battling for equality. Instead of the lower strata of society, less educated as the true carriers of Marxism, CRT claims that the new sainted ideological class is what Ruffo calls synthetic revolutionaries. These are radical Marxists who, through affirmative action policies and other cultural practices, have gained entry into elite institutions of society. Ivy League universities, premier state institutions, and other parts of the bureaucracy, and even inside corporations. These critical race theory advocates now claim the mantle of a kind of elite revolutionary, or again, synthetic revolutionaries. Their goals are not stated openly, as doing so would undermine popular support. Their goals are implicit. Instead of radical revolutionaries seeking to take over the means of production in America, the new CRT Marxists do not appear to be interested in economic means of production. The new revolutionaries have no interest in managing, say, a GM plant outside Detroit. This reflects an ideological goal of moving from economic redistribution of wealth to symbolic redistribution. They are fighting a spoil system in a largely symbolic manner. What they want are titles, prestige, and jobs in the bureaucracy. Ruffo uses examples of a diversity, equity, and inclusion officer at Google, a highly prized job. It involves work at the tech giant and pay of around $300,000 or $400,000 a year. This allows the DEI officer to play act as a revolutionary, imposing gender pronouns or imposing critical consciousness exercises on a mass of vulnerable and socially awkward computer programmers. So, you see, these neo-Marxists getting these titles and prestige and taking what amounts to public and privately funded sinecures to promote their ideology without having to do the drudgery of really the learning and the technical expertise of running an assembly line or running a large agricultural enterprise. The synthetic revolutionaries have actually made peace with the capitalist production apparatus and are content to delegate production to the capitalists. Instead, these neo-Marxists want control over all elite cultural institutions and a kind of parasitical relationship that is more than enough to serve the interests of the new synthetic revolutionaries. The new Marxist, American Marxists have also moved away from communism's fear-based strategy, but they keep violence-oriented strategy alive, as seen in the leftist riots of the summer of 2020. These riots are designed to gain more concessions from the so-called oppressors. The new neo-Marxist strategy for gaining and keeping power is to manipulate people and institutions using a guilt-based strategy. So, when CRT is imposed in schools, we see students in grades K through 12 dividing children by race to sides of the room, two sides, and telling the children of European descent they should feel shame and guilt and should feel responsible for historical crimes committed by people who look like them. The other side of the room is told that they should feel anger, rage, and a spirit of vengeance for the crimes perpetrated against the people who look like them in the past by people who look like their classmates on the other side of the room. This is something that is happening today all over the country. The Marxists are using a false and tendentious historic critical race theory narrative of American history that all of the landmarks of progress, the abolition of slavery, the 14th Amendment, the Civil Rights Act, were all a result of false consciousness, a mythology designed to put the revolutionary class to sleep. This is totally historically false. But the goal is to erase the historical memory, sometimes physically tearing down statues, but oftentimes through the curriculum of school books that seek to dispatch any narrative of American goodness or greatness, and even eliminate the complex and multifaceted narrative of American history and replace it with a kind of acid wash of American history. The third is to force the Marxist concept of identity that seeks to delegitimize entire categories of identity, mainly sexual identity, by creating the false idea of multiple genders and that people can change their sex through surgery or hormones. This is a reverse hierarchy of moral values, using a relativistic frame of reference to impose a very falsely moralistic idea. CRT theorists are deceptive about what they really want. They never disclose what their ideal society looks like or how they would govern institutions. What they would do in a democratic legislature in making laws, for example. Here is where I disagree with Rufo in his analysis of the neo-Marxist and critical race theory. He asserts that the new Marxist revolutionaries actually have no desire to govern, as Lenin did in taking over Russia in 1917 and producing the calamity that was the Soviet Union. The neo-Marxists want to work within the bureaucracy, and herein lies their path to power. They deny their ideology even exists, and that is because these revolutionaries are anti-democratic and hope to alter the system from inside the system. Democratic scrutiny and democratic decision-making will result in people rejecting their ideology out of hand, so that's the reason they're hidden. The radicals also seek to coexist with democratic rule at the same time subverting that rule through their power within the system. Thus, we see the massive rise in the power of the bureaucratic state with almost unchecked power that is being taken over by neo-Marxists through a decentralized control mechanism that is not coordinated directly. It is not organized as a conspiracy, but instead as a set of mutually reinforcing incentives and cultural patterns that use media technology, schools, human resources departments, and even corporate messaging campaigns that have all lined up behind what is a left-wing orthodoxy that has gained popularity and a certain elite strata of American society. This subversive system is then using those institutions to impose its ideology through various channels and creating incentives. The new political orthodoxy is created where transgressing the new Marxist ideology is regarded as a mortal sin and ground for cancellation. Those who do oppose this, like myself, place reputations at risk, occupations, comfort, and in some cases physical safety at risk as well. Neo-Marxists use ideological incentives to achieve their goals, ranging from the softest incentive, suggestion, or repetition, or training according to the media narrative. It has crept into our advertising and is seen in mass media, all designed to condition people to the neo-Marxist narrative. At the end of the day, critical race theory is based on pure negation. There's nothing positive. There's no positive vision for society. There is no reformist agenda. The writings of Derrick Bell, considered the godfather of critical race theory, a Harvard law professor, capture the thrust of critical race theory. Bell was once a dedicated civil rights attorney who desegregated schools in the Deep South and integrated those schools. But Bell has turned against the United States and lost faith in its system and its civil rights movement, which is advocating, and he's advocating a philosophy of pure racial pessimism. He thought and made the argument in print that the black Americans were on the verge of racial genocide in the United States. He said racism was a permanent and indestructible feature of American life. Even the election of Barack Obama, the first black president, to him was not a demonstration of racial progress, but simply another governing elite in charge of a racist country. The important point that CRT as a whole, is unable to move beyond critique. They abdicate all responsibility for proposing any policy, and then ultimately become synthetic revolutionaries socially interested in maintaining their own elite reputation, status, and sinecure. Conservative economist Thomas Sowell correctly criticized Derrick Bell for moving away from desiring a society of equality and ended by advocating a revenge society, so that the spirit of revenge is actually the driving force that can provide no reconciliation, no transcendence, no progress, even on its own terms. As the great Russian writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn revealed in his monumental work in exposing the evils of Soviet communism, the imposition of group identity, as the neo-Marxists advocate, was at the heart of the Soviet evil. Solzhenitsyn reveals that the new face of American Marxists is not so new after all. Like Soviet communism, their ideology is based on Marxist philosophy and the materialist concept of history, an explicitly atheist concept that views history as a result of material conditions rather than ideas. As Marx himself observed in the opening of the Communist Manifesto in 1848, quote, "The history of all hitherto existing society is a history of class struggles. Thus, all human beings could be identified not primarily by their individual identity, but their group identity, and thus divided into one of two categories, oppressor or oppressed. Marx himself said so." And this is a quote from Marx. "Freeman and slave, patrician and plebeian, lord and serf, guildmaster and journeyman, in a word, oppressor and oppressed, stood in constant opposition to one another, carried on an uninterrupted, now hidden, now open fight, a fight that each time ended either in a revolutionary reconstitution of society at large or in a common ruin of the contending classes." The real danger from neo-Marxists now embedded in the American system is that they are paving the way for the future danger of China ultimately taking control over the United States. Xi Jinping describes this communist expansion as national rejuvenation, but national rejuvenation has nothing to do with nationalism. It is a Marxist-Leninist concept for the Chinese communists to be first accepted as morally superior and correct to the U.S.-led system of freedom and democracy that will one day rule the world. The key obstacle preventing Chinese communism from dominating the world is the United States, and thus the neo-Marxists are not divorced from Chinese communism that is seeking both ideological and temporal power throughout the world. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
If you enjoy listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, please consider helping Bill with his important work of educating patriots just like you about how communism is very real and even more dangerous than ever before. Your donation to the Victory Over Communism program will help expand its reach across America and throughout the world. In fact, you'll be helping to provide the kind of information that may well make its way behind the new Iron Curtain and the Great Firewall of China and inspire those living under communism to seek freedom. Supporting the Victory Over Communism program is easy. Just visit the program website, victoryovercommunism.net, and click on the link at the bottom to gofundme.com. Again, just visit victoryovercommunism.net and click on the link to gofundme.com. Thanks for listening, and God bless America.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. For the counterproposal section, or the spiritual section as I like to call it, I'm going to explain more about the overall VOC worldview. The counterproposal is based on the teachings of the late Reverend Sun Myung-moon, who applied a new understanding of Judeo-Christian values and principles to highlighting the fallacies of Marxism, and then offering a new vision that seeks to actually solve the problems communism claims to offer solutions to, but will never be able to accomplish. The VOC worldview includes a systematic analysis of Chinese communism and American Marxism, and to that I'll add neo-Marxist woke ideology. More important, it presents a viable counterproposal that goes beyond merely opposing these ideologies. The idea behind the VOC worldview is to fight ideas with ideas. The main purpose of the VOC worldview is to promote and strengthen an understanding of God and humankind's relationship with God. Why? Because those ideas are the basic and fundamental weapon that can ultimately defeat communism ideologically. The key element of Marxism, as I mentioned repeatedly, is that it is a godless ideology, in fact, a godless pseudo-religion. Therefore, by clearly and rationally understanding God, we can be armed ideologically to overcome the godlessness of communism that is the core of its criminal and inhuman practices. I'm going to make several basic points in this section on the overall VOC worldview. Since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, many thought communism had been defeated. They were wrong. We now see the most serious ideological danger. atheist, materialist, and communist ideologies headed by Chinese communism that are being indirectly supported by the woke ideology and neo-Marxism now prevalent in the United States. My message, we must do more to counter them. The core evil of communism that is not clear to many in our increasingly secular society is the denial of God and the denial of spirit within people. When these are enshrined in culture, then finally a political party dominates the government policy. Throughout human history, God's existence was never challenged as it has been by communism. The very existence of God is challenged. When the state denies the eternal life of people, the inevitable result is that free-thinking and acting people who believe in God and spirituality are denigrated and can be eliminated in pursuit of materialist ideological goals. This is truly an emergency time. The one nation that can do something about the neo-Marxist woke ideology is the United States of America. God made this country powerful, God-centered, and moral so that the nation could be used as a champion at this time in history. A great challenge has come to humanity. God wants you as his task force. If America doesn't wake up and do something about the current state of affairs, the world is not going to survive. The VOC podcast is doing something. It is telling the truth about Marxism and communism. But more than opposing the ideologies, the VOC movement is promoting a God-centered solution to the problems that communism promises to fix. The VOC worldview is not exactly an ideology, but in terms of isms that are out there, this is what would be known as Godism, a God-centered philosophy joined with practice. It begins by affirming God and understanding that God is a real being and the ultimate source of absolute goodness. This God created you and me, the universe, men and women. He is the creator. God's essence is ultimately good, and therefore the created world has to be good as well. It's logical. When the cause is good, the effect must be good. Furthermore, God created not only a good world, he created good men and women. He created the world to be a world of perfection. This is why Jesus Christ on the Sermon on the Mount concluded by saying, "You must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." Jesus would not have said that if we were perfect already. It highlights the deep flaw within human nature that we need to understand and resolve in order to bring about a truly ideal society. What this is in reality is a separation from God and the ultimate goodness that was lost in the first human ancestors, so that instead of living unselfishly in harmony with God, humanity and the world has strayed away from the original orientation towards love and selfless people to a world filled with selfishness and ultimately evil. God is really working behind the scenes in this world, but the laws he used to create people in the world require that he needs to do this through people. In this way, we come to understand that each of us has a role in this effort to restore the current world to a world of God's perfection. When I'm talking about perfection, it is the perfection of people in terms of a deep union with God. People united with God and his desire for the ideal world is the formula that ultimately will solve the world's problems. Communists, Marxists, and woke ideologists do not believe this. Their strong belief is that there is no God, and thus, for communists, a change in the economic system will lead to an ideal world. The nihilists of woke ideology do not even go that far. Their worldview is shaped by the false Marxist theory of dialectics, that only through struggle between two forces, in this case the ruling oppressors against those deemed oppressed, will solve all social problems. They are materialist-based solutions without the origin of the ultimate good can never resolve the deep internal human contradictions that have us seeking goodness and happiness, but being unable to resist evil and its consequences. As the late Dr. Fred Schwartz, a great man who I knew very well, he once put it, he said, "I'm against communism because I'm against war, dictatorship, monopoly, slavery, cannibalism, imperialism, materialism, spiritual infanticide, and idolatry." communism advocates and practices all of these. The reality of the world today is that it is suffering amid evil. War in Ukraine, Hamas massacres and hatred, Chinese genocide are the current faces of evil. But there was evil far before the appearance of communism. Far before 1848, there was evil. Following that evil is corruption. Corruption comes from dishonesty. Today, what is basically wrong in our society is dishonesty and selfishness and spiritual blindness. The problem is we think we know everything, and we're really living in a self-delusion. Selfishness brings about an evil society, and today we are virtually living in hell on earth. What communism has done is perfect that evil. It has institutionalized it. But we need to be clear that evil has been here all throughout fallen human history. That history being the first human ancestors who were created by God but were strayed and separated from God. The problem is that humans lost God and they lost each other as a result. I'm not going to go into detail in the podcast, but I will tell you that the VOC worldview is based on a true decoding of what is explained in the Bible as the ultimate cause of evil and suffering, and how to align with history as God's providence of restoration. We are separated from God. We are disconnected from the first cause and from each other. The purpose of the whole was lost. People became selfish. We lost God and we lost our fellow human beings. This is why there are so many wars, killings, deception, corruption, and exploitation. We do not recognize each other as brothers and sisters. We do not recognize each other as one common human family. We do not recognize each other as a common society, nation, and world. This is the core problem. This is real alienation. Separation from God brings separation among people. What is God going to do? You can read in Isaiah 46:11, "I have spoken and I will bring it to pass. I have purposed and I will do it." This is a powerful statement of the will of God. God spoken, has spoken, he will bring his word to pass. He didn't say, well, I may do it, or I'll think about it, or I'll sleep upon the problem tonight. God did not say that. He said, I will do it. So God has spoken about the ideal, and he has spoken goodness, and he has spoken about perfection. So he's going to do it. We need to recreate what went wrong. Not too many things can go wrong in God's creation because God is perfect. Human beings were separated from God from the very first ancestors. As a result, we are disunited on every level. Individually, between our minds and our bodies, within families, societies, nation, and ultimately the entire world. Human history is not a march to world communism. It is a history of restoration, actually recreation toward an ideal of a perfect world. Perfect in the sense of deep, unchanging relationships between people and God. Communism's theory of history is based on historical materialism. They say that communism is inevitable because history is running according to the law of the dialectic. The dialectic is supposed to drive and steer human history inevitably to the workers' paradise. But historical materialism is based on the assumption there's no God. Therefore, as soon as each of us understands that there is, in fact, God, historical materialism will be relegated to the dustbin of human history. If God were the only one to maneuver history, then history would work like clockwork. But people are the instruments chosen by God as partners in the history of restoration. We are his partners, and we are in a joint venture with God. History is a joint venture. Therefore, even though God is moving 100% correctly according to his ultimate will, his partners that he needs, you and I have been neglecting our part, our portion of responsibility. So the totality of God has not been fulfilled. It's been prolonged time and again. Today, the United States is at a joint venture with God. Unless each of us does our part, humankind's historical struggle between good and evil will not be settled. We have to know that God's will, what it is, invest in our portion of responsibility. That will, God is telling us strongly, is to stop the spread of communism and the atheistic materialism of woke ideology and neo-Marxism. Then each of us must urgently go further and promote God-centered moral and spiritual values that will prevent Chinese communism in particular from dominating the world with its atheistic ideology. This is a clear mandate from God. The United States, this great country, this great people, has to lead this crusade. This is a clear mandate. Unless we do it, unless we do our portion of responsibility, the accomplishment of God's will be prolonged. It will be done, but it will be prolonged, just like the Jews in the desert after Exodus. I'll elaborate further on the next episode that will discuss the VOC worldview counterproposal a little more in depth, showing that humans are both physical and spiritual beings, that there are two worlds, the physical and the spiritual, that the traditional family is ultimately the school of love for people, that our actions in life had an eternal aspect, and that our spiritual lives are central to our existence. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
Hi, this is Bill Gertz. I wanted to talk to you briefly about my latest book. It's called Deceiving the Sky, Inside Communist China's Drive for Global Supremacy. This is the most important book you can read to fully understand the threat posed by the Chinese Communist government. I urge you to get a copy today. It can be found at my website, The Gertz File, that's gertzfile.com, or at the book site called deceivingthesky.com.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. For this, the news portion, I'm going to explain what is happening in America today that is clearly under ideological assault on many fronts. The most visible form of this is manifest on elite U.S. universities, where Israel's war against the terrorist group Hamas has set in motion a disturbing rise in anti-Semitism, couched as support for Hamas that neo-Marxists have cast not as a terror group that is engaged in mass murder, torture, kidnapping, and rape, as witnessed in Israel October 7th, but as part of the oppressed, a new Marxist class replacing workers who must be liberated, glorified, and ultimately given total power and control. Heritage Foundation analysts Mike Gonzalez and Catherine Gorka, both previous interview guests on the podcast, call the radicals taking over campuses today, like Columbia University, next-gen Marxists or next-generation Marxists. Today, it's become clear that the revolutionary is no longer the worker, but members of the racial and gender marginalized groups. Marxism has evolved. Again, the first sign it is not based on truth, for no truth is changeable, but truth emanates from God as an unchanging. Current radicals were forced to change their ideology because it is ultimately false and based on untruths, such as that there is no God and that people are merely animals without spirit. If we listen closely to the voices of pro-Hamas protesters, it's clear their agenda is not limited to opposing Israel. Earlier this month, one pro-Hamas demonstrator told someone on YouTube that the protest he was leading was really about getting rid of America, getting rid of the West. "Everyone here understands that at some level we need to get rid of America," he said, "completely." This pro-Hamas protester said in motioning toward a crowd of demonstrators. The protester generated some 40 million views on X after Elon Musk reposted the exchange. In many ways, the anti-Semitic pro-Hamas protesters are only the latest manifestation of anti-American Marxists who have promoted a narrative in the United States that the country, our country, is systematically rotten, racist, patriarchal, heteronormative, fill in the blank. that all Americans live in an oppressive structure. This false narrative has been introduced into American universities since the 1980s and gained momentum after the 2020 Black Lives Matter and Antifa riots in that summer. And now it's entering every single part of our lives. It has affected not only the upper reaches of the culture, but within the ranks of the increasingly leftist-dominated Biden administration as well. There is, for example, the evolution of Marx's dictum that the changes in the material forces of production will dictate the pace of the revolution. Cultural Marxists and neo-Marxists who came along in the 20s, after the revolutions failed in Western Europe, placed less emphasis on economics and more on culture. Popular beliefs and ideas are themselves material forces, said Italy's Antonio Gramsci, the most famous of the cultural Marxist ideologues in the 1920s. To this end, American Marxists added race, sex, climate, and so on. Eric Mann, the former Marxist terrorist who recruited BLM architect Patrice Cullors, wrote in 1996, neatly echoing his two predecessors' themes from the 40s and 20s, "The racialization of all aspects of political life operates as a material force in itself," Mann said. Marxism evolved from the original economic themes of the Manifesto and Capital to the cultural Marxism of Gramsci and others to today's race and gender-based obsessed variant and woke ideology. Today, the revolutionary is no longer the worker, but a member of racial and gender marginalized groups or those who sign up to fight the revolution over climate, over Gaza, against colonialism, or others. So we see climate activists blaming capitalism for killing the planet. Or the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada saying that democracy may not be up to the task of fighting climate change. Capitalism and democracy, you see, can now be fought under all these issues. What the Marxists fail to understand, and this cuts at the heart of their evil ideology, is that democracy and capitalism may not be perfect, but are far superior to their alternatives. Hoover Institution fellow Victor Davis Hanson, a tremendous guy who I know well, captured the national crisis facing the United States in a recent article posted on X. Hanson explains the internal destruction underway that I say is the direct result of neo-Marxist woke policies of the radical left. "If someone wished to destroy America," Hanson said, "could he do anything more catastrophic than what we currently see and hear each day? What would an existential enemy do that we have not already done to ourselves?" It's a really powerful point. He's not alone. Peter Boghossian, a former professor at Portland State University who left the university over radical policies, said leftist mayors have produced urban decay based on a misguided prioritization of compassion over law and order that made societal problems worse. He also condemned ideological indoctrination at universities and the lack of scientific evidence behind gender-affirming care for minors, a euphemism for the worst kind of child abuse. "If I were prone to conspiracy theories," Boghossian said, "I would believe that they are in service to an enemy state, because it's almost hard to believe that the decay, the urban decay and the rapid onset was the result of mere incompetence. It truly boggles the mind to think that." But it's not a conspiracy theory. A listing of the 11 actions by Victor Davis Hanson makes clear the country is on the verge of civilizational destruction. First has been the wiping out of a 2,000-mile-wide southern border. This has allowed 10 million foreign nationals to enter unlawfully, with no audit of any kind. It has nullified all federal immigration laws and facilitated the smuggling of toxic drugs that kill 100,000 Americans a year. The millions who broke the law are given free support. Those who objected are smeared as racists or xenophobes. Federal spending policies have run up a $35 trillion, that's with a T, in national debt. And there is an added $1 trillion to that debt every 100 days. Those wishing to cut wild spending are defamed as cruel and inhumane. Appeasement of enemies like China and Iran is another step, along with demonizing allies like Israel. terrorists are permitted to attack Americans with no response. Islam is promoted as either similar or superior to Christianity. Leftist governments abroad are praised and apologized to for supposedly past toxic American international behavior. Current policies seek to follow international agencies like the UN, the International Criminal Court, or the World Health Organization that blame America for alleged neocolonial and imperialist behavior. This is pushing America to second-tier international status, befitting American decline, and this is a main strategic objective of Communist China. In a multiracial society, the radicals have redefined identity only as one's tribal affiliation. The goal has been to ensure that each identity group rivals the other for victimhood and for state spoils it confers. They have redefined all political issues by race and sex oppressors and oppressed. This has included the destruction of all meritocratic standards of admission, retention, promotion, and commendation. The Marxists also redefined violent crime as understandable, a cry of the heart expressions of social justice. They have ensured no bail and same-day release for arrested, repeat, violent offenders. They empathize with the violent killer and rapist, ignore their victims, especially if they are slain police officers. The U.S. military, too, is being emasculated by using non-meritocratic standards of race, gender, and sexual orientation to determine promotion and commendation. The Marxists deliberately smear as racists and insurrectionists the largest demographic in the military, who in recent wars died at twice their numbers in the population, so that they leave or never join the military. These radical policies also have encouraged retired high-ranking military officers to slander the commander-in-chief, as occurred with Donald Trump. The defense budget also was cut, and weapons have not been produced in sufficient numbers. But the pullout from Afghanistan, the disastrous pullout, left an estimated $8 billion worth of American arms, in terrorist hands. Marxists have reinvented the justice system to indict, bankrupt, convict, jail, and eliminate political opponents, while using ballot removal, impeachment, civil suits, and state and federal indictments rather than elections to defeat opponents. Mobs are being used to attack the homes of non-compliant Supreme Court justices and to attack them personally by name. The Marxist subversion also has encouraged the fusion of the bureaucratic state with the electronic media to form a powerful force for political audit, surveillance, censorship, and coercion. We saw how the FBI was allowed to marry up with Silicon Valley companies and hire its contractors to warp the news and hound supposed enemies of the people. They have made war on affordable gasoline and natural gas. In place, the radicals substitute inefficient, unreliable, and expensive wind and solar power, even as energy prices bankrupt the middle class. Culturally, the anti-American left is urging young people to marry late or preferably not at all. They view males as toxic, especially boys, and urge having no children or as few as possible. Likewise, they assure children they are entitled and must be sheltered. They are raised to have grievances against past generations and against current norms. Our once world-class universities have been turned into indoctrination centers by the radicals. The Bill of Rights has been suspended on campuses, with free speech and freedom of religion lost, and youth are trained to graduate despising their own culture and civilization. Foreign students are recruited from hostile nations to subsidize the campus commissar bloat. The university curriculum is being replaced with therapeutic propaganda. SAT, ACT tests are banned, and students are not evaluated on high school GPAs. Leftists ensure that merit does not select the student body. Tuition is charged at rates higher than the rate of inflation, and the government is billed when students default on their loans. Victor Davis Hanson attributes this subversion to the policymakers currently controlling President Biden, who are using him to advance a destructive agenda that would, if it continues, end America. The reasons are unclear. However, Hansen gives three possible explanations. First, the radicals are delusional and think that their socialist and globalist agendas are working and will actually save us. Or they are raging nihilists who do not like the United States and deliberately want it destroyed as a service to the world. They believe a ruined U.S. is preferable to a strong America. Or they're Jacobin revolutionaries like those behind France's Reign of Terror who are intentionally erasing the old United States as a prerequisite for creating an entirely new America that will arise from the ashes with no trace or even memory of the past. Last, America is being destroyed by those with no agenda, aimless fools and utter incompetence. These bunglers just wing it day to day in response to what their radical media, academic, and political masters dictate is necessary for them to retain power. They have no idea of the damage they are doing. Hansen believes the destruction is a result of the first three, but not the fourth. That is not a destruction by aimless fool. My own view is that the assault on America is the result of all four types of ideological forces, and I would add that the weakening will be exploited by the Chinese communists, who are already supporting the Communist Party USA as a fraternal party that in the future could be brought to power as an extension of its Beijing counterpart. Recently, Senator Josh Hawley, a Missouri Republican, was confronted in the hallway of his Senate office building by just such radical Marxists backed by Beijing. The group is known as Code Pink. In a video posted on X, Hawley addressed the protesters by noting that they were funded by Beijing, and then asked them if China is engaged in genocide against Uyghurs in Western China, and he told them to stop taking money from Beijing. The anti-Israel Code Pink crazies are back roaming the halls of the Senate, calling Israel a terrorist state, Hawley said. But when I confront them about all their dirty funding from China, they get suddenly tongue-tied. They don't know if the Uyghur genocide is real. Hawley said that a New York Times report from August revealed that records show Code Pink received donation from groups linked to a U.S. tech mogul whose network has been pushing Chinese propaganda. Code Pink once criticized China's rights record, but now defends its internment of predominantly Muslim Uyghurs, which human rights experts have labeled a crime against humanity, Hawley said. He added that Code Pink mixes progressive advocacy with Chinese government talking points. All these anti-capitalist Marxists and nihilists have failed to recognize one important fact. The current system in the United States, emphasizing freedom, individual liberty, and free markets, while imperfect, has produced the greatest advancement of human civilization and history. For that reason alone, we need to fight to keep it. I'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Stand by for more after these important messages.
If you enjoy listening to Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz, please consider helping Bill with his important work of educating patriots just like you about how communism is very real and even more dangerous than ever before. Your donation to the Victory Over Communism program will help expand its reach across America and throughout the world. In fact, you'll be helping to provide the kind of information that may well make its way behind the new Iron Curtain and the Great Firewall of China and inspire those living under communism to seek freedom. Supporting the Victory Over Communism program is easy. Just visit the program website, victoryovercommunism.net, and click on the link at the bottom to gofundme.com. Again, just visit victoryovercommunism.net and click on the link to gofundme.com. Thanks for listening, and God bless America.
Hi, friends. During the break, I'd like to briefly mention a little bit about my website, The Gertz File. It's gertzfile.com, and there you can find lots of information. I mentioned earlier my book, Deceiving the Sky. I also would like you to look at I War, War and Peace in the Information Age, which was my previous book, and this is a really important look at information warfare and what we need to do to counter it. I also have information, further information about the podcast, as well as information about the Gertz File Investigative Reporting Project, and all of my stories linked to the Washington Times.
You're listening to Victory Over Communism, featuring exclusive interviews with today's top newsmakers and trendsetters. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. I'm joined now on the program by David Burgess. David has a PhD in critical theory from the University of Washington, and he's education director for the Settlement Project, which is an important project that is working to promote American values and counter woke ideology. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your effort that you're calling WICC, W-I-C-C, or Woke Ideology Critique and Counterproposal.
Sure, happy to. So together with the founder of the project, Dr. Frank Kaufman, we've been working on a book, actually, which will be forthcoming. But we created these lectures, and basically the point is to try to put what we're experiencing now with the social justice revolution or the woke revolution, however people want to identify it, as in its context, right? Which of course includes Marxism, but also I go back even to the Enlightenment and the French Revolution. There is a common theme that we find in each one of these sort of revolutionary moments.
Yeah. And you described the first is going back to, I think, was the Enlightenment or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So something fundamental happened in the Enlightenment, right? People have all heard of Descartes' cogito, I think, therefore I am. Seems innocuous enough, but what it did was totally change the orientation of human beings. Before they were, God was the subject and the center. This completely changed it around, and human being became the subject.
Yeah.
And from that, you have these rationalist ideologies that develop that attempt to create society based on human reason.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they understood religion and the old political system as superstition, and they were going to replace that with reason. And that was the motivation of the French revolutionaries.
Mm-hmm.
So they redefined God, mm-hmm. and they came up with their own new mythology. And they tried to implement that. But as I like to say, it ended in the Reign of Terror, and people, yeah. Scratch their heads and wonder how that could happen. But actually, that was always part of the design, right? Because not everybody's in line with the new revolution. And what do you do with those people?
Right. And if you have a materialist view, then people are just can be put away and as pure animals and having no spirit. Then the next phase, obviously, was the Marxist revolution and the coming to power of Lenin in Russia. So we had Marxism-Leninism, and this clearly people are beginning to understand the depth of the problem there, although we're still dealing with Chinese communism today. And now we're currently in the last phase, which we're seeing with woke ideology based on recreating society with critical theory. Can you explain a little bit about how that is shaping up right now?
Yes, I can. So, of course, in 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed. Up until that time, of course, most of the academic theory was based on Marxism and a class-based critique of capitalism, Western society, Western tradition and values. And that also included other critiques like, race, critical race theory and also gender theory. But the focus before was class. But after the Soviet Union collapsed, there was a change in focus, right, to focus on race and gender. But also those underwent something of a change too. Again, traditionally they had been Marxist critiques, but at that time there was a rise in what we call postmodernism, right? And postmodernism comes from the French theorists, and it's incredibly, it's completely relativistic. They even denied, you know, that Marxism didn't, you know, because it had a goal of history, you know, believed history had a purpose, which the postmodernists challenged. They said, they call it, and you may have heard this term before, but they call it a meta-narrative, which is basically just a story we make up. So history is just a series of events. It doesn't lead anywhere. And they even critique the very notion of truth. And so truth was rendered, shall we say, inoperative, right? There was no such thing as truth. There's no such thing as a fixed meaning. So as you can see, it's completely relativistic. And this is like underlying a lot of the woke ideology, because what they did was they said they accepted the postmodern perspective and worldview, but they said, and here's the connection point, I think, with which people see with Marxism, they said, you know, but we know we're oppressed, right? But because they denied truth, and because they even went so far as to deny science, it's based on their own personal experience. Right. So, and you hear this all over, and people don't really understand where it comes from. But, you know, people talk about my truth.
Right.
Well, that's based on the assumption there is no actual truth. And so we just all have our own experience. And their experience, they say, is one of oppression. And so therefore, you know, they've adopted identity politics, and which also began as a Marxist critique. And based on identity politics, then they came up with this idea of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah. So you make the point that these three trends, first the Enlightenment, then the Marxist revolution, and now woke ideology, it redefines or rejects God, and it creates its own founding myth, which replaces the Judeo-Christian values which we have, and also importantly, redefines the nature of good and evil. I think once that is done, you don't have a sense. And this gets to this idea that everybody has their own truth. If there's one truth from God, and then you can have an understanding clearer of good and evil. But this then leads to viewing people in the dialectic terms of either with us or against us. Enemies or partygoers or sympathizers. And clearly that, I think, is kind of where we're headed today. How does that play out under woke ideology? We're looking at cancel culture, right?
Right. Yeah. So, of course, we know in the past, you know, the French Revolution ended in the Reign of Terror. And we know, of course, what happened in Marxism, you know, the Gulag, because people who don't agree are considered part of the oppressors, and they have to be removed. And the Leninists were very clear about this. They were explicit. But we live in a democracy, not in a failing monarchy like the French and the Russians did. So there are some limitations on what you can do to people, at least currently. But, you know, so, but therefore getting rid of, well, let me back up a step. I want to make the point about good and evil, because I think it's very important. You know, in a traditional worldview, in a religious worldview, you know, good and evil is something, you know, we all struggle with. To do good or to do evil, to do right or wrong. This is an individual matter, right? Each one of us have to confront that in our own lives. But with all of these ideologies, including the woke one, good and evil is defined in which side you're on, right? It's because they all believe that in order to make people good and even perfected in some of the language, then society has to change, right? Mm-hmm. So the rationale is we have to remake society so that people can be good. Mm-hmm. And those people who stand in the way are clearly enemies of the revolution or enemies of the state. And so you turn your opponents into enemies. And what do you do with enemies, right?
Yes, ruthlessly, you know, eliminate them, right?
Well, if, you know, if you're Nazis or whatever, what do? You have to kill them, right? You have to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And that, by the way, is a common phrase that's used these days. You just call people Nazis. You turn them into enemies, and then they have to be eliminated.
Yeah.
We don't have a gulag system in America. We have a democracy, but you know, if there's continuing weakening of our system and further chaos, you know, I'm not a fearmonger, but you know, if you don't learn from history, you're going to repeat it.
Yeah. And okay, so now let's touch on a little bit of the counterproposal side. How do we counter these three trends of the Enlightenment, of communism, and now woke ideology? What's the solution? How do we address them?
Well, the problem is that we don't offer utopia, right? I mean, that's a hook for a lot of people, right? Of course, these utopian ideals always wind up in terror and dystopia. But setting that aside, human beings, you know, have through the period we're talking about, made tremendous advances and progress. And rather than reject religion, the people on the religious side have significantly reformed it. Right during the, you know, there was a real problem with the Catholic Church in France during the French at the time of the French Revolution. Right, but it underwent tremendous reform through the Reformation. Right, so, and also in America, you know, America had slavery, but we've had a very successful civil rights program. It's the work isn't complete yet, but we've made tremendous progress. And our belief is that we can simply build on that. But I want to make one more, I think, what we consider as part of the most important part of the what we call the counterproposal. And that is, you know, you hear a lot about white supremacy and white people, and there's an assumption that all the white people are the same, and but actually, you know, the religious pilgrims that came to America came from all over Europe, and throughout the history, these people of differing religious beliefs killed each other and fought terrible wars. So actually, America was a tremendous success in finding a way for those people who traditionally hated and killed one another to forge a common identity, to have a unified system. And we used to call it a civil religion, right? Where everybody could participate, maintain their own private beliefs, but have a public square that embraced everyone. And that's the success that made America the great nation that it became. Now, though, it's not just different Christian sects, right? There's every ethnic and religious tradition in the world is here. And frankly, for the world, there's no other place for this to happen, but we need to find a way to create a common identity and a common understanding of all the world's traditions. And have one nation under God, as our motto says, right? That that we can all not just tolerate one another, which you hear a lot of, but learn to appreciate each other and create a and that's really a lot of the effort of our counterproposal is to try to, you know, we call it a refounding of America.
Yeah. Which dovetails nicely with what I'm calling the VOC worldview, which again is based on the idea that each person, as you say, has infinite value as a creation of God, and that this is a starting point for really finding real solutions. I agree with you. The vision of the Marxists and the woke ideology, it provides a non-religious, non-spiritual vision, which it really needs to be countered. Yeah. Last question. You mentioned, let's look at a renewed American Revolution. And what would that look like? How would we go about revitalizing the American Revolution?
Good question. So part of it is, and we state this in our counterproposal, you know, none of us are our own point of origin, right? I mean, we all have a navel, we all came from somewhere. So you have to find what we share in common. The other thing we share in common is that we all come to being in a family. And yes, some are better than others and some are more privileged than others, but those family bonds are an important part of our identity. You know, many times the sort of rationalist or materialist view views us all as individuals, but we're not, right? So those are things on which we can, which we have in common and upon which we can build. And then, you know, you need to create communal bonds, right? That those things exist through churches or in social organizations. You know, we did this before. It's no different this time. It's just it has to include everyone, right? So, and yes, it's a stretch. It was a stretch for our founders to Baptists or Methodists to accept Quakers or vice versa. So we have to stretch ourselves, right? But creating community will allow us, I think, to have sort of deeper connections and build a national unity. Because the problem with always on the side of the secularists is it's divisive, and certainly DEI has been incredibly divisive. And people are recognizing that a lot of these trainings don't solve anything; they create more problems. So it requires an approach that recognizes the infinite value of each person, right? And that's what is always rejected by the secularists, right? Because if you're not with them, you're against them, and you're an enemy that has to be eliminated.
Right. We've been talking with David Burgess. He's the education director for the Settlement Project. David, how can people find out more about the Settlement Project and your woke ideology critique and counterproposal?
Yeah, Bill. So the easy way is our website's very simple, SP for Settlement Project 12, the number 12, sp12.org. We're doing some spring conferences. There's one in the Bay Area this weekend. And also we're going to be in Columbus and Virginia next month. So there's information there on the website. And then, but the website is continually updated as new information is available. So that's a good location.
Great. Thanks so much for being on the program.
My pleasure. Enjoyed it. Thanks.
That's it for this episode of Victory Over Communism. Please tune in again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for listening to Victory Over Communism with award-winning national security journalist Bill Gertz, the only program in the free world unafraid to pull back the curtain of communism to reveal how the Communist Party of China and even America's own brand of Marxism pose real threats to freedom and democracy in America and the world today. See you next time on Victory Over Communism with your host, Bill Gertz.